This is the G-Stone Guy, presenting the most pleasing and pleasurable, passable, pacifying podcasting networks. This one has comic book buffs, wit, humor, nerd news, debauchery, collecting, and camaraderie. Blazing Defender Report, Breaking the Panel, Pokemon Go Podcast, Toy Power, Botched D&D Podcast, perfect portable podcast to take any place except for work, church, nandas, or schools. There are many podcasts to listen to, and each one comes with their own host with fun, fantastic dialogue that will miraculously make you want to move to a different country. Hear the news at Breaking the Panel. Catch up on comics with Blazing Defender Report. Have a drink with Botched D&D Podcast. Collect some toys over at Toy Power. Catch a Pokemon with Pokemon Go Podcast. And these podcasts fit together to form a podcasting network. Giant-sized team-up network, so incredibly inane, so unforgettably forgettable, so perilously painful, so dazzling, deplorable, you'll want to lobotomize yourself. Giant-sized team and ogre and shows are sold separately from some boobs. The shorter they are, the better they are.
Breaking the Panel is the flagship podcast on the Giant-sized team-up network. You can support the show at patreon.com/breakingthepanel, and you'll find more of our amazing podcasts at giantsizedteamup.com.
And welcome to Breaking the Panel, where we talk about everything that is awesome when it comes down to fandom, social issues, and comic book justice for all. I am the Rock God of Podcasting, Charles McFall, and actually on my screen, to my upper left, Phil Mega Man Brunson.
I've got a head full of cold medicine and a goblet full of wine. Shit might get weird tonight.
I can't drink alcohol when I'm sinusy and sick. That's not cool, man.
That's the only way to make it work better.
My bottom left, I got Casey Strohs.
Also here drinking wine and not wearing pants.
I hate wine. I don't understand. I mean, nothing against it. It's not my thing.
It's a beer bottle, you idiot.
Oh, right. Wow, how many of these have I had?
We can actually see, you guys can't see us on the podcast. We can see each other, and that's going to make an interesting show tonight. And where he should be directly beneath me, Paul Klotz.
Really?
2 weeks in a row?
Yeah, how much great you are. That's where you sit.
What a dick.
Well, I will
and
be
that's
nice.
Not complimentary, by the way, okay? Don't.
No, it'd be complimentary, but maybe not complimentary. So, Klotz.
I'm sorry. Did Georgia just correct the way I said something?
Totally did. What you got? What are you watching? What are you playing?
Why don't you eat some fucking pecans or something and get back to me?
Pecans are what you piss in on a long ride. Pecans are what you eat.
Well, you can have them both.
So. So what are you reading, watching, playing, man?
I'm blind with rage right now, to be honest. Let's see. I watched a new show this week that is going to get canceled on Fox.
Which one's that?
L.A. to Vegas.
Oh, yeah. I've been watching it on
Hulu. It looks so bad.
It is. It's terrible. But yeah, it's funny.
It's something about seeing Dylan McDermott as a creepo, right? It's something.
Okay. That's what I was going to get to. Yeah. Dylan McDermott just going nuts, like I'm just here for the paycheck and I'm gonna be as stupid as possible is what makes that show worth watching. I'm like, how the mighty have fallen, how the man who used to collect a giant big old paycheck is just like, please pay me, please. it's not a great show. It's gonna get canceled, but it has its moments. Other than that, I played some Rocket League with a bunch of morons over the weekend. That was like 4 hours of my life that I'll never get back. I had a considerably better opinion about it until one of those morons just shat all over me on the intro of this show. So
it's the position that the recorder placed you in, sir.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's me for the week. No 20-minute diatribes about
Destiny.
It was 45 minutes.
It got cut in 20 minutes.
And yeah, it was a manifesto.
But after editing.
Yep.
I thoroughly enjoyed playing Rocket League this weekend. There were definitely some ups and downs. The most memorable line I've repeated multiple times since then was, I was into my first drink. I was tired the day, and I actually had said, you know, guys, I think this is going to be my last round. And then Klotz broke out the, I don't know what just happened, but McFall just went chaotic stupid on us, and I lost it. I laughed so hard, I almost peed myself, and then we played for another hour. So it was great. Phil, you were there.
I was kind of.
You were the DJ horn throughout the entire 4 hours.
Yep. I'm pretty bad at Rocket League on the PlayStation.
Pretty bad would be generous.
Pretty bad. Yeah, I mean,
old pro Paul Klotz over here.
Well, I mean, he was blaming lag.
Fucking esports.
So much. When he was not winning, it was lag. Or his teammates. So
no, excuse me. It was lag until we plugged in the PlayStation to the network,
and then it was your teammates. Sorry.
Yeah, well, yeah. Then it was your colossal failures. That
I think it kind of turned out that if Sean and Klotz were on the same team, they won. If Sean was on a team with anybody else, Klotz lost. It seems
pretty much. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was. Yeah,
I had a lot of fun. And I hope to do it again, and maybe next time stream it onto Twitch.
Maybe.
But, I mean, my first game was my best. And then the longer the night went on and the more I drank, the more I did terribly. So, it's probably just my paddles. It's not me or the alcohol affecting my play styles. It's definitely the controller. Mm-hmm. But for watching for the week, I don't know if your listeners are aware of my DVD collection I have in my basement. But
unwrapped mint condition.
Yeah, I think you should really call it more of an archive.
Well, sure, we'll call it what it is. But
collections of silver coasters.
I have a plethora of DVDs and Blu-rays that I buy, and then they just sit on there, collecting value, kind of like the Bitcoin market. You know, it's just always going to go up.
Just what? Your entire basement is going to crash now?
It only dropped about, you know, $6,000 in 12 hours. Anyway, so I made it a point this year to possibly go through and get as many as I can watched. I think I have 10% of my collection I've actually seen. So we're going to go movie by movie and hopefully watch all of them.
I just like to imagine you walk into an FYE and they're like, oh shit, it's Phil, everybody hide.
Well, see, I used to work and manage Blockbuster, so when stores would close, I would just purchase like huge lots of movies for cheap, cheap.
Yeah,
so I have all these sitting down there. I mean, I don't know if they're good or not, but I'm going through them. So this week I watched Mad Max the original. And yes. I watched Road Warrior, both for the first time this week.
Nice.
Sounds
like it'd be an interesting one-off podcast where you and your wife go watch a random movie and then you give 10 minutes on what you thought about it.
Well, me and Chris actually had the idea of going through the
I bet your real wife, not your podcast.
Well, I know, but she doesn't care about me or podcasts. So. Road Warrior surprisingly holds up really well.
Oh yeah.
And
the first one does not.
Well, I mean, I kind of look at it as not really a post-apocalyptic, but definitely into the psyche of where Max is and how he got there. And the decisions that he's made in Road Warrior are set up because of the decisions that he made at the end of Mad Max.
Right.
So he's kind of got a Punisher storyline, like, you killed my wife and kid. Now I'm just going to kill you off one by one. Until my bloodlust is fulfilled.
Yeah.
But I definitely want to see Travis Jones cosplay as Lord Humongous down at Dragon Con next
year. Oh, my God.
I don't know why he hasn't. So
just walk away and drink Black Rifle coffee.
Just walk away.
I don't know the name of the character, but I want to see him cosplay as Tina Turner.
Oh, Anti-Entity? From 3?
Yeah, from 3. Thunderdome. Yeah.
So last night I was going to watch Thunderdome, and I was going to finally watch Total Recall.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, I haven't seen
it. Yeah, who can forget Mad Max 4 Total Recall?
Yeah, well, I mean, I've seen Fury Road, and I don't own it, so I'm not gonna waste time on it. I enjoyed it a lot, but it's just, you know, I'm trying to get through these DVDs and Blu-rays I haven't watched.
Yeah.
But instead, I finally finished Mario Odyssey last night. I think it is my favorite Mario game of all time.
Is it great?
What was the second contender, 64?
64, 100%. Galaxy is up there, but 64 revolutionized video gaming as a whole. But for some reason, Odyssey is just keeping me real deep. And even though I finished the storyline, there's a bunch of bonus content at the end.
Yeah. Get to see Peach roam all the worlds in a bunch of cute outfits.
You do. And there's a Mario 64 level in there. So it's a kind of nice callback. And my last thing that I'll just touch on quickly, I finished The Runaways, and episode 10 might have spoiled the rest of the series for me.
Good or bad, you mean?
Bad. I hated episode 10 so much. Casey, what'd you watch this week?
Actually, I've been catching up on a lot of comic books I put to the side, you know, because I like to read in bulk, because once I get something going and I want to write about it, you know, whether it's an as yet unpublished review or you name it, I read them in a big stack, just like I used to when I went and bought them week to week on a Wednesday. And the top of my stack these days is what's going on in Avengers, in issue number 675. Because they dialed all the numbering back to the original one. It's called Avengers No Surrender, was the crossover. And all this weird stuff is going on. Heroes are getting frozen and, like, time-locked, almost like they're put on pause, but they're still alive. So the remaining Avengers kind of get together, and they're figuring out what's going on. And the Earth has kind of been kidnapped, like that one Invader Zim episode with the Planet Jackers. But they can't figure out why. But this new character called the Voyager, who she wears like a yellow spandex costume, like pretty 60s sort of inspired, white hair. She shows up and everyone's like, oh my gosh, the Voyager's back. And I'm sitting here reading this comic and I'm like, I've read maybe every issue of Avengers ever. Who the fuck is this character? And it turns out, because they're publishing Avengers every week, because they've got like a rotating art team, so they're pumping it out four times a month now, which is awesome, because you know, you get that story coming together and you don't have to read multiple books, you can just read the main Avengers title and you get everything you need.
And the quality of the content's holding up.
Oh yeah. Who's doing the art? I think Pepe Larraz is doing the art. And he drew Uncanny Avengers for a while, and I think he probably draws the best-looking Rogue in comics right now. So I love him. But this latest issue did something really cool. How much do you guys know about the Sentry?
Oh, yeah. That's the split personality of, I think his name is Bob, the alcoholic.
Yeah, Bob Reynolds. He's like the closest thing Marvel has to a Superman. One of multiple.
The power of 10,000 suns exploding?
Yeah, 10,000 or a million. Somewhere between 10,000 and 1 million explosions.
Casey, I know some shit. Casey.
I'm proud of you. Well, where did you read that in? World War Hulk?
No.
Confirmation that he's read two comic books.
Yeah. All right, carry on, Casey. What you got?
All right, so the whole hoax with the Sentry thing was that, oh, Stan Lee had this unpublished superhero that everybody seemed to have forgotten about. And they like faked him into old covers and like he had his own run and stuff like that. And eventually it was established that like somehow he got retconned out of existence. Well, now this Voyager character, they're doing sort of the same thing, but backwards. Like, she's been there all along. How did you not know this? And in Avengers 276, which actually came out today, they redraw her in this old, like, Jack Kirby, Don Heck kind of 1962 pencil style in old panels. So they have her in Avengers number 1. They have her in Avengers number 16. They've got her in Avengers 58, number 70. And she gets in this fight where she gets disintegrated and literally sent out of continuity. And whatever's happening with the planet being jacked has her come back into existence. This is how it should have been done.
There's like fourth wall being that they're admitting as a comic book.
They're like, they're treading on it. Cause the page spread of her being sent out of continuity is just plastered with actual comic book covers, not like panels of history as they might have happened. Like, we're talking credits and the barcode that you would get if you bought it at a supermarket, like that kind of thing. That's on the page of her getting shunted out of comic book history. So it's weird, but it's very cool. And I think that if they're handling this the way that I think it's going to happen, this is how they should have done the Sentry from the beginning. They introduce a new character and they just bring her into the fold with everybody kind of understanding that she's always existed. And then you sort of explain it backwards. Even if it wasn't the case, maybe she's some freak from an alternate universe that has this weird reality warping thing going on. But this book is fantastic.
Cool.
It's written by a team of Mark Waid, Al Ewing, and Jim Zub, who are writing the regular Avengers book and Captain America. Al Ewing finished Ultimates, and I think he's writing U.S. Avengers or Occupy Avengers, and Jim Zub is writing Uncanny Avengers. It's just a really, really solid comic, and it doesn't require any previous knowledge. You can sort of jump right in, because everything's going nuts and the characters are trying to figure out what's happening too.
Nice. Yeah. Sounds like something I'll read in 10 years from now, probably.
Yeah. Well, I think the arc finishes in probably 12 issues, so 3 months, which is not bad for a full story.
That's cool.
I'll send it to you.
I'll take it. I'll read it. Hardbound edition, gold embossed lettering, all that jazz.
Oh, yeah. You get the works.
The works. I'm trying to think. I don't know if I've seen anything amazing. So I went and saw Star Wars for the third time because my youngest is, it's a long story, but we ended up seeing that. I honestly did not enjoy it for the third time. It was a drag because I've seen it too much too recently, I think. I did get Titanfall 2 thanks to Paul Klotz shooting me a link, and he and I are going to start playing that fairly soon. Got my ass handed to me in Rocket League this weekend. That was all fun. Although I think I greatly improved. I went from total shite to kind of shite. So I think I'm like,
I was convinced. Okay, so we were playing 3v3 private match with Charles and his son, who were in the same room.
Yep.
My roommate and I, who were in the same room on two different PlayStations, and then Phil and Dr. Ussel, a friend of ours. And the thing is, I'm pretty sure the entire time Charles was not actually playing the same game that we were.
What? For sure. Once I changed the game to just wreck Sean for the whole match. Right. I didn't go after the lodge when I was on the whole time.
Occasionally, it was like our continuities combined and you would actually collide with the ball on accident. And that was interesting.
I always got really loud when I did it on purpose though, which is about four times in the 4 hours.
He would hit the ball to the side of the field and then gloat about touching the ball for 10 minutes. I got it, man. I wanted to get it and I got it.
Hey, I got a PlayStation trophy that says I blocked 10 goals. I'm good.
I got a participation achievement.
You actually got one that damage control. You had three that night, actually, because it shows up because we all played together as a party. It shows up on my PlayStation.
I think whoever is friends, you get to see what you get.
Yeah, so that was fun. It was a lot of fun. I've never been a multiplayer kind of guy, but now that I actually have friends that I like, it was cool to do that. It's been a crazy week, man. Still been super busy at work, and we had Snowmageddon happen where we get about half an inch of snow where I live, so the whole city shut down today, and that's been a thing. And on the upside, for anybody who's been kind of following me across the podcast universe here, I think I finally figured out what my issue with my internet is and got that fixed. So there's
one of your kids chewing on the power cables.
Dude, I almost choked the dog out for that one day. I won't go into it next. I haven't finalized it, but it was a third-party application physical thing that was going on, I think, is blocking it. But I got everything fixed. It looks like, anyway. There was one other thing. Big news from last week. Our good friend and producer, Mike Woodard, had some medical stuff happen, and he's still chilling in the hospital, but he's good. He's good to go. And he'll be you'll hear his voice back recently. Thanks to Casey for picking it up last week. And apparently Casey does a spot on Mike Woodard impersonation to open the show.
It's all right. It's pretty good. I fooled my own parents with it.
That's awesome. Or sad. I'm not sure which. Yeah, I don't know if you noticed, Phil. One, by the way, since we can see each other, I got to comment. Phil picked up the coolest mug ever. It was a Mario pipe. That's a really nifty coffee mug. But so if you're Waluigi, Casey has to be Luigi. He has the big L's on his headphones.
Oh, well, I got an R on this side. I could be.
Oh, wow. That is like headphones for dummies right there.
Headphones for Casey's.
Yeah.
That's a big L. Enough of our synonyms. I like the chocolate synonyms. All right. So here we got some news. I imagine this is Casey putting it in. The Tick is renewed for season 2.
Yes. Have you guys all seen The Tick?
Nope. I've seen 0 episodes. I forgot about it. I'm sorry.
Oh, come on.
It's not intentional. I want to see it. I just forgot.
You mean you're telling me that you're so excited about me getting a picture with The Tick?
I was.
You were never inspired to check out the show.
I forgot. Isn't it an Amazon Prime thing?
Yep. Yeah.
Okay, so that's part of my hang up is I got to find it. That's all. I mean, it's on me. I forgot. I forgot. But right. I will have to find it because I don't have the Amazon of Primes.
Well, it's good. I'm a huge fan of The Tick. Comic books, cartoon, first live action show with Patrick Warburton, and now this current one with Peter Serafinowicz. It's great. It's funny. It takes things in a little bit of a different direction than before. There's some darker elements to it. But The Tick is still bombastic and as large as life as you'd expect him to be.
Do we get cheer face?
Not yet. I'm hoping.
We're hoping.
Classic, I would love to get some live action chair face, just carving his name into the moon.
Just go to Dragon Con, you'll get it from one of the girls in the audience.
Yeah.
Well, didn't somebody throw a chair at off the balcony last year?
Oh, well, that too. No, that had nothing to do with our audience.
You'd get a chair face as well on that too.
That had nothing to do with our audience. We did have – actually, she's a loyal listener now, but we did have a lovely young lady pick up a chair and try to throw it at her panel. I can't remember if it was that Dennis or if it was that Klotz or Travis. Is that you? Mm-hmm. Oh, that's right, because you're being me and you made a very sexist joke.
We were discussing how I felt – sorry, my version of Charles, felt about the new lady doctor of Doctor Who. And my version of Charles was perplexed because he did not think that women could be doctors. and now I know of at least 2 people listening to this when it comes out that are going to be mad about that. Yeah. I actually know they both know about it. One of them is.
It's a bit.
Yeah.
It's a bit.
It's a bit.
So, but did you get to see The Tick?
I did.
And you hold Casey's high regard for it?
It was good stuff. It was fun.
It's only 6 episodes, though, which is the real shame. So they're going to do a second half of the first season. So they're doing 6 more episodes of season 1, and then what looks like 10 episodes in season 2. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like a chain of news of The Tick constantly coming out in the near future, which is great. I'm all about it.
They've been very cautious with The Tick, you know what I mean? Like, they're trying very, very hard not to overextend themselves and basically greenlight a show that nobody was going to watch, but people are watching it, so that's a good thing. I applaud them for giving it a chance and letting the fans show how much they wanted it.
Yeah, that's very cool. And I will try to filthy casually watch it at some point, Casey, I promise.
Yeah, man, just, you know. You'll just put the time in, man. If you're feeling like Travelers is getting too heavy for you, jump right into The Tick.
I'm all caught up on Star Trek talking about getting too heavy. Holy crap. Riker's, William Frakes. What's his name?
Jonathan Frakes. Yeah.
William Frakes. No, otherwise known as Will Riker. Jonathan Frakes, when they return on the return from the break, he directed that first one. And then the continuation was directed by somebody else that came out this last week. Holy crap. That's all I can say is holy crap. It's interesting. It's much better than the first couple episodes that they released with Star Trek Discovery. But that's neither here nor there. I like this headline. Spike is dead. Long live the toxic masculine man.
Yeah. So Spike's dead. Spike TV as a network is kaput. As of yesterday, I believe, was the last day. And they've transitioned. This is an article from Entertainment Weekly, basically talking about how when Spike TV came out in 2003, how it was kind of like in vogue at the time for,
yeah,
you know, various networks to make kind of hyper masculine, quote unquote, content, which is funny because most of the content that was aimed at the hyper masculine guy wasn't that masculine. It was just content. In particular, like they're mentioning, for example, like The Man Show. You know, the classic Adam Carolla, yeah, Jimmy Kimmel show. Yep. Maxim being a paper publication and its side shoot stuff, which, an ancillary publication so generic it was literally just stuff. But anyways, the article was basically talking about how this kind of branding just doesn't really have a place in our society anymore. Right now, at least not on a wide scale. It doesn't really resonate with modern audiences, and people didn't really give a crap. So it is now Paramount something. I forget.
But where am I going to go to watch 6 episodes of Star Wars back to back to back to back?
Right?
This is like the only thing I ever tuned into Spike for.
TNT.
Yeah. What about
the Paramount Network is what it turns into this April.
Right.
So the only thing I remember from that was MXC. That was it, man.
Right. Oh, well, that's the funny thing is Spike over the years has had some interesting stuff here and there.
They had one clip show. The first time I ever watched a clip show was on there. It was 3 guys and they do the internet clips and it was all, of course, masculine type internet clips, but it was, mm-hmm, fun. I cannot remember the name of that show. That's how good it was. But right, that was the first clip show I watched, and then there's definitely been better ones since.
The big thing that stands out to me is they had the Blade Show.
Oh, yeah. That's where that was.
That I didn't enjoy, so I didn't watch.
They had the Video Game Awards for quite some time until they moved that to Twitch.
Yep, they had that, yep. So, yeah, you know, interesting. So if you're a big Spike fan, sorry about the end of your era.
And you're probably not listening to this show.
No, I mean, the audiences are probably the same, if I had to guess. So.
I mean, if you are a big fan of the Spike branding, why aren't you listening to Blazing Defender, and why are you listening to us?
Yeah.
I'm sure Travis shed a tear for the bros over at Spike. But yeah, no, it's an interesting thing. The reason I brought it to the table this week is because I just think it's... this is a really interesting example of a cultural shift having happened over, you know, 15 years, suddenly resulting in some, you know, the branding going away because it just doesn't have its place.
Yeah.
It's, you don't really think about a lot of things in that kind of terms. And then all of a sudden it's like, well, I remember when Spike came out and now it's gone because it's just, it's so absurd now when you think about the origins of it, you know? So.
Was it? What? No, it wasn't. I was thinking because there was a weird progression because it didn't just launch a Spike, did it? I think it came off of something else, like transformed, like and I don't think this was a progression, but like the progression where there was Tech TV, then it became G4,
right?
Then it became something else.
Don't mention G4.
Sorry, yeah, but you know that's something that like progression.
Yeah. Rip.
There was something else before it was Spike.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, it might have been G4 before Spike. It was,
Because G4 merged with Tech TV.
Yeah.
Is that what it did? Okay.
Yeah. Oh, mentioning G4, you know, G4 is another thing that went away. And I remember people being kind of bummed about it. But I realize now the context is because everything that was being done on G4 can be done on the internet better, cheaper, faster. You know what I mean?
That's why Leigh LaPorte has his own media network on the internet now. Mm-hmm. Because of that.
It was TNN.
There you go.
Oh, right.
There you go. I knew it was something.
Yep. Yeah, so Spike's gone.
See ya.
And they went out in a blazing fashion on Twitter.
Oh, yeah.
So I caught this last night as I was getting ready for bed, but I saw a tweet come through from Spike that just said, "Welp, since I'm out of here anyway, I might as well tell you all the things I've been holding back for the past 18 years. Brace yourself, bro. Shit's going to get real." And then he just, whoever's running their social media account, just goes on. It's like a semi-scripted rant. Like, "I clogged all the fourth stalls on the seventh floor of men's bathroom for the 30th time this year."
Or some of these jokes are too on point to be off the cuff.
A little bit, correct? Yeah, that's what I feel. But it was funny to watch last night, you know, going through, like, "I was baked when I pitched 1,000 Ways to Die. Those episodes are based on most of my nightmares." I thought that was funny. So, I mean, I'm sick, so I was on a head full of NyQuil reading these Spike, "Go fuck yourself."
Giggling to yourself.
I was like, these are the funniest things I've ever read.
So you were a little Phil sipping the syrup?
Well, I mean, you know, Spike TV, this was what, 2003?
Yeah.
So I would have been a junior in high school, which means...
you were the demographic, for sure.
I was stoned as hell watching MXC, laughing my ass off, hopping between Spike and whatever Adult Swim was producing at the time. Mm-hmm. Since those both of those stations...
The return of Family Guy, perhaps.
Well, no, I mean, in 03, you got, like, original Aqua Teen or Space Lab 2021, or C-Lab 2021. So, I grew out of Spike's demographic. I don't really enjoy bro shows, no mo's. But it's always sad to see a smaller television network disappear and get swallowed by, you know, big corporations... as in Paramount Network or G4 turned into Esquire.
I think that you hit the demographic nail on the head when you said your head was full of NyQuil and you were sick and you've probably been drinking, and then that was the funniest shit you ever saw.
Yeah.
You know, it's when you have to have a network based off of chemical inebriation, it probably is not going to last forever. What you got, Klotz?
No, I was just going to say, you basically have to be sipping the syrup to be – digging Spike, right?
Seems that way.
I mean, you know, at the same time, there was a lot to keep me engaged as a youth. They had wrestling. They had Stripperella, who's like my ninth or tenth favorite Stanley superhero. They had the revamp of Ren and Stimpy, which was weird.
It was horribly
and uncomfortable.
Weird. Yeah.
But wasn't that just like the original uncut Ren and Stimpy?
No, it was it was John Kay making new episodes.
Yeah.
Okay. I skipped it because I, at that point, was like, "Nah, I'm not gonna tune in for this recutting of."
No, it just doesn't have the magic of the original. Like the, it's, you know, I mean, you're a huge fan of Animaniacs, so you can appreciate a good show that skirts the censors, like getting stuff under the radar, which the original cartoon was a master of. But when it's like
innuendo,
when it's like in your face. You know,
okay, so case in point, I watched one episode when it first came out, the new version, the old version, I watched them all. Like you're saying, Casey, innuendo, skirting the censors, towing the line was hilarious. On the Spike TV version, literally, yeah, Stimpy's the dumb one. They made a pitcher and a catcher homosexual joke, and when it shot to Stimpy, he had a catcher's mitt on his ass.
Yeah.
So it's very much, that's not funny, that's just blatant.
That's poor writing.
Yeah, it's just not. Yeah. It's not very good. And they also didn't have Billy West come back for it, which is a damn shame because that guy is just a master of voice work.
Once you start replacing voice actors, you know it's not going to be good.
No.
Speaking of what may not be good, I don't know. This might be good, depending on what kind of fanboy you are. No, what's this Nintendo Labo? Why is it called Labo? That could have irritated me. I don't know why it irritates me, but it does.
So Nintendo Labo is a Nintendo project that they're launching in April of this year, where it kind of takes your Nintendo playing of the Switch and adds a DIY element to it. So from what I can tell from the short video that just came out a couple hours ago and an article that's in front of me, it is a build your own out of cardboard mini games, and it's supposed to be fun.
What are you building?
In,
out of
so like lore. in the video there's like
which has no narration by the way, which
correct cool. So it's all visual, and I'm sure we'll put a video up in the show notes if anybody actually reads those, but it's a small, let's say 13 key piano is one of the kits you can build, an RC car, a fishing rod game, a toy house, a motorbike, and then they have this big full body robot suit
with a backpack.
With a backpack, and all these things are supposedly in your kit that you buy from them. It is cardboard cutouts with eyelet rings.
Like branded or something?
Correct. Yeah. So this is a whole new like game to life kind of way, but you build your own thing. So take what you do with the Skylanders.
Yeah.
Except you're building the thing that is being used in the game.
It's kind of cool. So Lowe's and Home Depot had gotten into that game for the last couple of years. They phased it out mostly now, but they would do kits to get you to bring your kids into the store. You'd build projects, and whenever a big kids movie came out, like Madagascar 3, I think was came out during that time, it'd be that branded something. So you go build a car, but it'd be the Penguins of Madagascar car, right, with the stickers and whatnot. So it sounds kind of like that, where you're maybe getting Nintendo branded stuff, but you're still using your brain and being constructive. Or
but you need to have the Switch to plug in to each one of these things that you build.
You say plug Wait, like it's ma- it's like it's not made out of fucking cardboard.
Yeah, well, yes, I mean, I'm using plug probably in the wrong way, but you know,
what does the Switch have to do with it?
So the Switch has two controllers, your left and right one that can be detached from the system, and you put them into these cardboard pieces to interact somehow with the cardboard construction that you've made. How does it work? I have no idea, because it's not out yet.
It's got to have something to do with like such extremely precise positioning relative to the screen.
Yes, it does, but it's also an interesting look of, you know, toy to life. You know, toy to life is starting to rapidly take a down, you know, decrease in production and sales and all that. So it's interesting to see them coming in this late in the game and doing a, not really a create to life, but kind of doing it at the same time, trying to encapsulate the crowd of people who enjoy putting Legos together. I know Lego Creations just ended, but also it's, I'm intrigued. I'm intrigued not enough to be a first adopter of this, but I am intrigued to see what people are going to do, maybe not only with this technology, but where the future of cardboard cutout video game playing could lead us.
Now, Klotz, I got two questions for you. First off, because I personally consider you one of my go-to toy experts for what's the market doing now. Is Amiibo hurting? Because I know they canceled Lego Dimensions, and Skylander's been up and down and this and that, but
I was going to jump into that. So Skylanders is in a hiatus year where they're not coming out with a new title this year, which they had come out with a new title every year for,
which I thought was way too much.
Right. Well, it is too, particularly because, the latest series of figures rarely are backwards compatible or anything.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, with Skylanders being in that situation, and then Dimensions was canceled after its second year, I would hesitate to bring a Toys to Life type product to market right now. Because they're all, I mean, Infinity got canceled as well 2 years ago, you know, Disney. So basically, you have Skylanders, which was the first adopter, who's got hundreds of figures. That line is failing, or at least slowed down to the point where they're just going to milk the most recent generation Imaginators. Infinity is completely canceled and discounted or gone from literally every retail store.
Yep.
And Dimensions is canceled and mostly discounted in a lot of places, but still in your like Targets and your Walmarts for
it's
now.
Not discounted in Georgia, because I keep trying to pick one up.
No, yeah, it's very all over the place. Because I've been, I did pick up a few Dimension things this past week. I got Powerpuff Girls and A-Team Van with B.A. Baracus. And E.T. with a weird flower. Anyways, but yeah, no, I mean, so like if Disney can't do it, the originator company can't do it, and then Lego can't do it. Even with how strong Nintendo as a brand is and how the fanboys and girls and the nostalgia and everything that feeds the Nintendo machine works, I don't know that they can, you know what I mean, push a product like this forward successfully. Now, Amiibo stands a little bit outside of the rest of the Toys to Life stuff because it's not, Amiibo's not pushed as buy this game and play with all your Amiibo other than like the Brawl series, right, where you can play with a lot of them. It's really pushed as, like, for example, I have a Fire Emblem game on my 3DS. There are four figures from the Fire Emblem figures that are compatible with it. I can get stuff from them and I can get them in the game if I own those, you know, figures. Amiibo mostly sells as well as it does because they're really high quality sculpts and they're dope. You know what I mean? Like, I have a few myself, just some, like, I've got Samus and I've got Mega Man, and then I've got,
no, me too,
I've got one Fire Emblem one, you know what I mean? Like, so even, and I don't have Brawl or anything like that, you know what I mean? Yeah. So,
well, I think that the thing that Amiibo has over the rest of these, you know, Toys of Life is that they work on both the DS and the Switch, mm-hmm, and the Wii U. So, the, you know, there's a three platform bridge that can be gapped.
They haven't gone out of style or functionality.
Yep. Well, and also they're mostly just for cosmetic or in-game items. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not like a standalone game.
Yep.
But I want to know what the cost is for these kits. If they're selling them, the variety kit that has the car, the fishing rod, the house, motorbike, the piano is selling for $70. Mm-hmm. And the robot by itself is $80.
Those things must work somehow. Like, do something.
But it's cardboard. So it's all cardboard based plus string, maybe some, you know, plastic eyelids.
There's rubber bands in the
and rubber bands. So it's like, how much do these things actually cost compared to how much markup you're making for $70 of cardboard and rubber bands?
Well, yeah, they arguably won't cost much of anything. What is the interface point, though? Is it the camera's picking up on, like, tracking points visually with the camera? Or is it...
Well, there is no camera. That's the thing.
Switch,
it's like,
doesn't have a camera?
No. You know what? The actual console itself might have a camera.
I'm pretty sure it does, because, like...
I'm pretty sure it does, because the Wii U had a camera.
And so does the 3DS.
3DS has a camera, so I'm going to retract that and say, yeah. So it most definitely has a camera. But I still haven't, you know, this is so new, mm-hmm, for us, because this just broke about an hour before we started recording.
Yeah, right.
And I couldn't read when I was driving home from work.
Because you're not Chris Wisdom.
And I can't read. But I'm curious. Mm-hmm. I want to know, like, because there are some of us, especially me, who have Hulk hands.
Mm-hmm.
So I destroy things quite simply. Yeah. So how much are there going to be replacement pieces? How much is that going to cost if your base product is already $70, you know, our MSRP? What's the deal? What's the deal? So
yeah, that's fair.
It's something different, you know, and it's strange for Nintendo to think outside their little box that they normally just keep to.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been very happy with post-Switch Nintendo, because they've really turned into an ideas. Yeah, let's take chances. Let's take new ideas. They've been a real voice of the indie community recently.
They're like,
which
the,
is
they're like the Disney of video games. Like, there's probably Nintendo Imagineers, yeah, just firing on all cylinders now.
You're not wrong at all. But it's very strange with, you know, such a history of treating their third-party game developers like shit for so many years, and then now that the Switch is out, they're like lax on everything. Like, yeah, we completely fucked up, so you can do whatever you want.
You
want
to make an XCOM game with Mario and the Rabbids?
Yeah.
I mean, you're not wrong, because the Skyrim that I have, you know, I just put my Zelda or my Link or Zelda, you know, amiibo onto my Skyrim, and then I have their costume in the game. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, I mean, I think Klotz, that's what you're saying. I think that that hit the magic of what they're doing. It wasn't buy this one game and then collect all the figures. It was, right, hey, no, get the figure because the figure's cool. Oh, look, it'll work in that game, and you can get this in that game, and you can get this in that game. And it's like, it's a figure with bonuses versus a game that required figures.
Yeah, and so, some games are more specific than others. There are some games that are literally just scan any amiibo and get like something unlocked in the game, like a cosmetic or something, or like an XP boost or something. You know what I mean? Like, you can scan literally whatever amiibos you have lying around that day and you'll get some benefit from it. Nice. Even if it's not necessarily a character or a costume or something like that. So yeah, they've various games have implemented it in different ways to positive effect. I do think it's in an interesting place with Nintendo, particularly because I'm a 3DS fan, and they're in an interesting spot with that right now because they're still supporting the console. Despite,
we know why you're a 3DS fan. We get it.
Which in auxiliary news, they just announced three new select titles coming out soon for the 3DS. A Link Between Worlds is getting a select title. Mario 3D Land
and Laser Shoot Larry
and Nintendo Remix
Dark Souls Remastered. No, wait, that's Switch. Sorry,
which is
I'm excited about.
Now, for anybody who doesn't know what I mean by select, selects means the price, the locked price point, $20, you know, red box games for the 3DS.
Oh, that's their that's
player's
their,
choice.
Yeah, that's their
Microsoft Max.
Exactly. Yep. Yeah. The thing is, they don't do it very often. Nintendo is very reluctant.
Yeah.
You know what I mean, to reduce prices on stuff. I mean, that's one of the things about Nintendo, like for 3DS collectors, like a lot of games never go below retail, particularly like JRPGs and stuff like that. So also there's a Shin Megami Tensei Redux game coming out too that people are like going apeshit over right now because it's like people are saying, yes, the console gets to go out with a bang. And I'm like, well, that's an interesting way of looking at it. But yeah, so Nintendo's in an interesting spot right now. I'm excited to see what they do. I don't know that I'm excited about this product we were just talking about, but I hope it doesn't blow up in their face. If that.
Well, I'm like I said before, I'm excited to what this could lead to, or what advances this could give to the not only Switch, but thinking outside the box on gaming.
Oh yeah,
it's, but totally. Really thinking inside the box because it's a cardboard box.
Yeah, literally made out of the box.
Well, that's why I was asking what the input is, you know what I mean, like how it's picking up on this stuff, because it's like if it's a series of sensors or something, I can see people going nuts with that and finding a way to like do cool stuff with it. If it's stuff with the camera, even still, I can see, you know, creative people finding new ways to tap into that tool. So it's exciting to see what comes of it.
I'm sure it's a combination of all three, because the sensors inside both of the Switch cons is pretty accurate. So, I saw one where, you know, the Switch con was being put in and turned like a key, and it went right in, and on the video, the key went in and turned just like it did on the Switch con. So, time will tell, but yeah, okay, I'm excited.
The grumpy old man in me says that this sounds like a level of AR, and AR is okay. Like, I love watching the commercial for the AR stickers for the Google Pixel, right? The Star Wars stuff. My wife's like, oh, did you see where you could, it's like your Pokemon game where you could do battles? Like, no, it's not. They're literally stickers. And yeah, they do cool stuff and they look great on your phone, but it doesn't do anything.
It's not like Pokemon Go. Pokemon Go is real. You look outside, they're right there.
I don't use the AR on Pokemon Go. I play that game because I have a contract with us show to play that.
now you're contractually obligated to play the show.
Let's not get into this.
No. But no. Okay. Even then, the AR is fun, but it's a game that you can play the game, right? And the stickers you don't play. You just apparently pose. Same thing with the Mountain Dew Walking Dead zombie stickers that came out at like Halloween. Mm-hmm. That I saw the commercials for. I'm like, yeah, it's cool. And those presumably, except for buying, you know, it's exclusive on Google Pixel. So except for buying the phone for exclusivity, the stickers are free. You set a $70 price point. Now, I like building physical things with my kids. I like it to be Nintendo branded. I'll play a little bit more for that. And I know we don't know enough, but it sounds like, it's like if I just point the camera and it looks like the controller's turning the key, that is not $70 worth of cool. Is all.
Agreed.
So, and again, early, but that's my
favorite. Now, with that said, I'm sorry, Paul.
No, I was just going to say, also consider, like, my other hope is that these components, these cardboard components, are going to be kid friendly, because would be a big swing and a miss if these things like disintegrate or are basically not easily manipulated by children and have repeat play kind of, you know what I mean?
They look like they're made out of that super tough corrugated cardboard.
It looks like it's the heavy cardboard, but also it looks like some of these builds are pretty intricate. Mm. Like, I'm only going off of the small video that I've seen, but they were showing the insides of some of these, and it's a bunch of strands and rubber bands and tightly spun cardboard. So it's going to be interesting to see, you know, if my 6-year-old son would be able to pick this up and put it together himself, or am I going to have to, you know, get in there and get just as confused as he is?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But with the one, the $80 robot pack, they had, Charles, sensors that, you know, connect to this backpack.
Okay.
It's with string. Two of them go out to your hands. The other two go down to your feet. And it's like cardboard cufflinks around your four limbs. And it's supposed to emulate on screen what you're doing with your arms and your legs.
It's somebody could probably come up with cool content, you know, media creations from that. I'm sure, you know, I could see that happening. You know, we'll see, but I did say I had two questions for Klotz on this. The second question was, when Phil triggered me, when you said, people who like to play with Legos, Klotz, did you venture out to get your, what was it? 3 pounds of Legos for $15?
No, I gotta work that out.
He got too scared.
yeah,
that does sound like a, hey kid, here's a red balloon and a sucker getting my van.
Yeah, I was
throwing these free puppies for you as well.
Yeah, somebody in my local area put they advertised 3.5 pounds of assorted Lego for $15, and so I was like telling the guys, I'm like, all right, what time are we recording tonight? And we talked about the time, and then I was like, all right, well, if I don't make it, it's because I was murdered by someone on Craigslist, because that's a trap that I'll walk into every time.
Classic Craigslist.
Yeah.
I mean, we've all been there, murdered in a back alley, am I right?
It was totally worth the $2 of it.
Oh, dude, can we can't talk about Lego right now, because I'm in the thick of like nerding out over Lego lately.
We talked about Lego for an hour after we completed the show last week.
Hey, maybe we can make that as the spin the bottle section of the show. We'll see.
Yeah.
Which I'm going to go ahead and get to, because you know what? This article I found, it just didn't feel like there was enough there to explain other than a rumor type deal. The basic gist is possibly the standalone Flash movie could be Flashpoint, which might reboot the whole DC thing, or it could be just no, I know, but there's not enough meat in this article to say this is a path. It's all questions.
I mean, this has been rumored for years since BVS was hot trash.
Well, I mean, there's
they had the whole scene where Flash is jumping out of that portal, and they're like, oh, well,
fine.
Obviously, they're thinking about taking this route.
It's possible. And there's two in an article, it's a legit article in Forbes, and it's got, let's say, 10 paragraphs. But in the 10 paragraphs, only two really address this, and it's not enough there for me to go, yeah, let's discuss it. It'd just be us kind of rambling about the ifs and ands of it, and I don't want to do that. So,
I'll say this. If it is, I'm out, man. Like, I'm so done with time travel in comics right now. In comic proper, you know, like
just right now?
Because it's played out, man. It's like after Secret Invasion. Well, it's not exactly time travel with Secret Invasion, but it is.
Secret Invasion's also 10 years ago this summer, by the way.
I'm talking about the one that just happened.
Yeah, there was another one.
Oh, Secret Empire.
No. Two years ago, we had another Secret Invasion, didn't we? Or Secret Wars, was it?
Secret Wars. Secret Wars.
I'm sorry. They use, like, the same
Yeah.
Look, there's so many secrets in Marvel, okay? Yeah,
it's fair.
they're more than just
the recent multiverse event. You know,
Secret Wars 2015.
Yeah.
Secret Editors as well. Let's not forget that.
Nice throwback.
Yeah, all of it, though. I mean, like, between what Marvel's done in their books recently and how they keep changing timelines and stuff and changing characters, DC having to do Rebirth, even though Rebirth seems to be a good reset.
Well, DC redoes their continuity every 10 years.
Right. No, and that's what I'm saying, is I'm done with all of it. Like, I think you need to get as far from that, away from that as possible right now.
Now, I will say, you know, they did it on The Flash. And it was okay, like the CW TV show.
Right, and that's what I was going to work up to, is that the entire Flash show keeps – the Flash show lost me because it had two solid seasons, and then it was like, we're doing a time reset. And I'm like,
It lost me when it is like he's barely powered by the Speed Force and more powered by the power of love.
Yeah, I didn't get that far.
The power of love.
Sure you did. You watched the first two seasons. He does all that crap where it's like, I gotta do it for Iris. I gotta run.
And then Huey Lewis and the news came out and started playing. Yeah, it was great.
Yeah,
I don't really interpret it the same way you do, Casey, but that's okay.
Do you like Huey Lewis in the news?
Oh, I love Huey Lewis in the news.
Who doesn't?
You know what's awkward about that reference is the guy he kills in that scene's name is Paul.
I don't see anything awkward about it.
Yeah, well, you wouldn't. Yeah, anyways, so that show is bogged down in time travel stuff. The offshoot show, Legends of Tomorrow, is all time travel stuff. The only show I want to show up for that is going to be time travel is Doctor Who. Everybody else can just take a seat and chill out with it. I'm ranting. I'm working up to the rant here. No, but anyways, like I've said it before on this show. My big issue with time travel is that I cannot connect with your story in a meaningful way when you just wave your wand and fix or change everything whenever you feel like it. I just can't.
Like a sonic screwdriver?
Yeah, exactly.
That's not how the sonic
screwdriver works. And I hate it. I hate it about Doctor Who, but Doctor Who has great moments that makes the show worth watching. You know what I mean?
Like Sonic sunglasses?
Yeah, exactly.
And they still don't just wave a magic wand and fix it.
Well, yeah, no.
Unless it's made of wood, then it doesn't work.
Yeah. Anyways. Yeah, no, so that's my whole thing is, like, I can't get invested in the story you're built. There's no tension for me when an entire season can be erased or an entire film in this case, you know what I mean? All that.
It's just like everything was a dream. Yeah. It's just like, well, then why did I just give you 15 hours, dickhead?
It's like I used to read Word Up magazine. Like,
yeah, I can tell that you're still mad about what is it, Saint Elsewhere? It's all the entire show is the imagination of one autistic boy with a snow globe.
Yep.
Is that how Saint Elsewhere ended?
I think so.
I kind of remember that pop reference, but I never.
It's tropey as heck. I love seeing it whenever it pops up somewhere else.
Hmm. Or wasn't it Dallas where everything was a dream and JR comes out and he was never murdered?
Something like that, yeah.
Nope, the only one?
Or
all right.
Well. Where the final season, Dan actually did die of the heart attack the whole time?
I don't
know.
Or Bruce Willis was actually a ghost the entire time?
The whole movie.
Spoilers, man! Spoilers!
That Come movie on. Came out 15. No.
But M. Night Shyamalan is a permanent no spoiler for 16,
17.
Well, The Village really took place in 2000.
Do not do this again this week, Phil. Do not do this again this week, Phil.
I can keep going.
I'm
going
to.
Charles, what's a big movie that you haven't seen that we couldn't possibly
Oh, God. Play? Don't answer.
So we're going to be
give
back.
Give it to me, Charles, please.
We're going to be back.
I'm sure it's in my DVD collection and I just haven't opened it yet.
We're going to be back after this few words from our sponsors, and we're going to have some more interesting discussion. So stay tuned. And we're back, and here is some awesome stuff that we're going to do. Number one, we want to hear from you. I know we say some controversial things on the show sometimes, and like, you know, Spike is for the bros, and maybe that hits you right in your bro heart. If you'd like to email us, we'd love to hear it, btp@giantsizeteamup.com. And, of course, you can leave a speak pipe over at Breaking the Panel on Giant Size Team Up. But what we'd like to do in the second half of the show is open discussion, right? We flip some things out, see what happens. Last week I threw out, I think it was about properties, right? Bringing your favorite properties to the big screen and do you think it'll be done? That was an interesting, fun time. Does anybody, because I've kind of blanked tonight, but does anybody have a question, a general purpose question you want to throw out and we can just discuss? As everybody looks down at their effing keyboards right now, including Klotz, who I can't see, but I'm sure he's just going, nope, I'm looking down at my keyboard. I fucking hate all of you. Well, okay, let's. You want to geek out about Legos, Paul? Geek out about Legos, man.
I really don't.
God damn it.
All right, well, I'll
I got one.
I'll save this about Legos.
Yeah, save it.
Right now is the post-holiday clearance season for Lego, so things are hot and heavy at your local retailers. If you're looking to get into Lego,
don't.
Yeah, don't. Because the crazy thing about Lego, so one of the things I'm interested in is, one, I like the creative aspect of Lego. I like that it's something you can do it as an adult and like you can build like Star Wars ships and stuff like that and get really intricate with it and do some stuff. And then when my 9-year-old godson comes over to hang out, we can play with the stuff too. You know what I mean? I'll pull out my minifigs and, you know, the next thing I know, he's shooting missiles from across a room and knocking out like, you know, nice. A stormtrooper with a giant gorilla that has a banana cannon. I don't know. I mean, it gets Lego's great. But the thing is, it can be quite expensive if you're buying everything full price. But if you get it on clearance, super sweet. Yeah. This is that time of year. However, I will give a cautionary tale to those of you who aren't like super Lego fans. Be careful when you buy things that are marked down at your big box retailers. Because 2 weeks ago, I picked up the Tracker 1 set, which is a Star Wars Freemaker Adventures set. And it was a repackage at Target. I got it home, started putting it together. And I realized halfway through putting the ship together, none of the minifigs were there. And a couple other small parts were missing. So people literally will go into stores and they will take a set off the shelf and either bring it home and then bring it back, or they'll do it right there in the store. And they'll go in and pull out all the minifigs. And ruined the set for you.
Yeah.
So that was the whole thing. It was a $70 set. It was marked down to like $50. I had a gift card for there, so I was like, oh, I'm gonna get it. And then I was like, oh well, this sucks. So I took it back. Luckily, Walmart's pricing is really good right now. They've marked down all the current run Lego stuff, so I only paid $56 for a brand new in box one from Walmart. So suck it, thief. I mean, Target still ate that set, but some thief out there is, that set in particular apparently was targeted because there's a unique droid figure in it that has a unique piece, and it's going for $25 on BrickLink, which is insane for a single minifig.
You know what community that runs rampant in? See Marvel Legends.
Oh yeah. Because oh right.
Marvel Legends has that build your, you know, yep, buy all the pieces and build your figure. So that runs rampant. Through the, yep, you know, just crack, take the piece you need, leave the, mm-hmm, the rest. Because I was trying to build the Groot, mm-hmm, back when Guardians first came out, and the Rocket Raccoon had the chest and the headpiece of Groot. And every time that I found the rocket, it was, you know, tampered with just enough to take the piece out. So
Frank Allen from Toy Power was talking about that with me in on Facebook the other day, and he mentioned that like sometimes you'll see people jam like the very wrong piece in there, like like it'll be like,
is
you're
this
putting
supposed Groot to come with Galactus's leg,
right? And it's a Groot set, you know what I mean? Yeah. No.
Well, at least down in Australia, they're kind enough to fill it with something else, you know. Up here in Pennsylvania, they're like, "Yeah, eat a dick, you fucking mug, huh? Deal with it."
Yeah. So just buyers beware if you're not really I saw some people in the Lego subreddits were talking about it because a couple other people got bamboozled. You basically want to check the packaging and make sure that the original tape on the sides of the boxes are all in order and stuff like that. And if you buy a repackage, make sure it's deeply discounted because you might just be getting a pile of Lego, like just random Lego. Somebody who worked at a big box retailer was talking about how – no, they worked for the Lego store. Somebody tried to bring back a UCS Millennium Falcon, you know, the $800 Falcon. It felt really light, so they cracked it open, and it was a bunch of random bullshit in the box.
Oh.
Did they crack it open as the...
Oh, yeah. The person apparently just left the store. Like, Yeah. So
they got a nice box full of Legos for free to take home to their kids.
It was like, they're like, it was like Lego and like random doll parts and stuff. It was like, they just threw whatever they thought would fill it up or whatever.
I like to think about the situation of them, you know, feel like in an Indiana Jones style, feeling the weight of the Legos and then feeling the weight of the doll parts. Yeah. This is definitely, they're not going to look. This is good. This is going to work out.
Then a boulder just rolls out of the ceiling of Toys R Us. A big old Lego boulder.
Klaus, you're talking about the discounts there. My kids they've done some work this year, so I made them save their paychecks to spend after Christmas, and they inevitably get gift cards or whatnot. And my youngest, Ryland, he had about $100 or so to spend. And it's all I can do to talk him out of the Poe Dameron helmet, because that was not discounted. It was still $80 after Christmas. There was no clearance on that. So I'm like, no, buddy, I can't let you run around in an $80 collector's helmet to smash into walls and act like you're headbutting stuff. No, thank you.
Right.
But
totally would.
He totally would. But I took him to the Lego aisle. He got it's from the Lego Batman Lego movie, so it's slightly older, which helps with the discount. Mm-hmm. But is it that big Batman grappler? I think is what they called it. The four wheel vehicle that's all odd shaped that they used towards the end of the film. There was normally an $80 set, which I think Lego's extremely overpriced on those kits. By the way, I mean.
It depends on the line. The Star Wars sets are marked up by like an easy 10-15% over whatever.
Yeah. I get there is a bit of a collector's market, but when I'm going to – I mean, I want to just buy it for my kid to build it once and lose the bricks. You know, I get frustrated with the prices. Ultimately, he got it for $20.
Wow, that's a great price.
It was hugely discounted. I was like, yeah, buddy, you're buying this one. Like, okay. And then I spent 3 fucking days putting it together with it. 2 hours at a time. We both worked and we got tired. Like, screw this. We'll come back tomorrow.
Yeah.
Lots of pieces. I think it's an 800 piece set.
People were talking about that on Reddit. They were talking about how some Walmarts, I think that's probably where you grabbed it. Deeply discounted it like crazy into the ground, and people were picking it up. And so something like that, if you have kids, a set like that deeply discounted that far is such a good value for your kids. Cause then you don't care what happens. Right. Cause like it's $20.
I mean, they could eat the pieces for all you care.
But if you're not a kid, like, so I have some sets that I picked up on clearance a few years ago with a gift card at Walmart, and I just parted them all apart the other day. Like yesterday I was like, these are stupid, like, Chima and Ninjago sets that I don't care about. These are turning into parts so that I can build other stuff. So I just, like, took them all apart, sorted all the parts. They're all in my little plastic bins now. And I'm like, yes. And now I just got to find a MOC that I want to make. A mock, if you will. It's great. Legos are great.
I know Mega Bloks is, like, the cheap knockoff or whatever.
But your Transmorphers of Lego.
Yeah. but I know they got the Halo license, whatever. But a few years ago when
Ben 10. Warcraft.
Yeah, and when Ben 10 was really at the height of its influence, which Ben 10 was a phenomenal cartoon. It really was. The second version was just as good. The Alien 4, I forget what it's called now. They made a live-action movie. It was okay. But the Alien cartoon... I used to know the guy's name who did the cartoon. So I can't think of his name.
Of the show.
But it's crazy good. And Mega Bloks actually got the license, and they did this new thing at the time that was about the size of a 32-ounce cup. and it was the figures from Ben 10. And it had that standard Mega Bloks round ball joint, which was perfect for their branding, because you would build the characters, and they were large figures you could play with, and they didn't fall apart easily. And if they did, you just pop them back together, and then you could interlace the parts from the other aliens. And man, I loved buying those for my kids because it was easy to put together and easy to find if they came apart, and just hours of fun. And I wish more companies would do something like that, because the Lego stuff, I get the complexity and the beauty of it, but god damn, so many parts fell off of that bat crawler. I'm like, come on. Yeah.
Well, so Lego has something kind of like what you're describing now for the Star Wars line. They have these big, they're called constructibles or something like that. They're pretty cool, but the price point is so high. I don't see buying them for kids. They're normally like $20 to $25 for a single figure. They're big, you know, like they're like bigger than a Barbie doll. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but the Mega Bloks were $10 to $15, I want to say.
Right. Well, because I have a Death Trooper and I have Chirrut Imwe from Rogue One, but I got them both for $5 at Walmart a few months ago. Nice. And I was like, $5, you have me. You know what I mean? Like, I'll make this giant posable Star Wars dude. $25, which they were originally retailing for, I'm like, no, come on, get out of here. Like, no. So, yeah.
Talking about that collectible, seeing Phil's wall, knowing the stuff, my camera's positioned where you can't see a whole lot of stuff because I got to clean up my office. But knowing we all buy fun toys, let's go around the circle and end the show with, and we'll start with Casey since he's been quiet for a minute. What is your favorite toy collectible, whatever, that you've found? Like, I'm looking at Phil's in his collection. I love the Bender with the wig. That's amazing. Yeah, but what's your favorite offbeat toy that you found somewhere that you bought?
Offbeat, huh?
Well, I mean, it doesn't have to be offbeat. It can be mainstream. I don't care. What's your favorite thing that you like? Oh, man, I just had to have this. This is my favorite thing in the world.
I mean, all right. So in the Big Lebowski, the dude has that rug that really ties the room together.
Yeah?
Mine is my Lego Star Destroyer.
Oh, I thought you were going to say you had the Big Lebowski rug or something. No.
A Lego Big Lebowski rug?
I can't keep a carpet in my room, man. How am I going to risky business all over smooth floors? You know,
turned around and so is it, describe the Star Destroyer. Is it like the big collectible?
At the time, other than the Millennium Falcon, or maybe more, I don't know if it's got more pieces, but whatever reason, it was billed as either the first or second largest set you could make.
Mm-hmm.
And I bought this back in high school, and I think even in high school it was like an older set. It might be like the first large size Star Destroyer they ever did, because there's been a bunch of new ones since and they don't look nearly as cool.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is 3 feet long. It's basically hollow on the inside. You build out this big like triangle shaped frame, and you slide like these four plates on it on the underside and the top side, and then you basically just build like the upper deck and the bridge, and everything just kind of slides right in. And it's on a stand too, because the thing is so heavy.
Mm-hmm.
Have you looked to see if it's worth anything today?
No, I haven't. But I also...
It is. It is.
Is it a lot?
It's... okay, so here's the thing about...
Don't tell him. He might sell it.
Yeah. I mean, I love it, but I don't know how much I love it.
Here's the thing about Lego, particularly Star Wars Lego. It's very rare that your set, if you keep all the pieces, will not be worth at least what you paid for at retail.
Right.
It might not be if it's not in good, you know, if you don't have all the parts, if you don't have the booklet and the box and all that.
I don't have the book.
Well, you can get the instructions for most of the most newer, like sets from the last 10, 15 years you can find online somewhere. But yeah, anyways, yeah, no. But the point is, like, there's a Forbes article out there about how if you buy sealed Lego sets and sit on them, they'll return more year over year gains than the market will. Like, just to give some perspective. So yeah, no, Star Wars, big stuff like the destroyers and the Falcon and the X-Wings and stuff like that, even the slightly older ones, you can usually at least get the retail back out of it for sure.
Yeah. But
you heard it first. Lego is more stable than Bitcoin.
Yeah, no kidding.
I don't think you heard it here first though. I mean,
you heard it here first. Lego is more stable than Bitcoin.
I've got a lot of fond memories of it because I built it with my dad, and he doesn't engage me in any of my hobbies, like, ever. He never has. So it was, like, weird that we could bond over actually building something together. Meanwhile, I built this when I was, like, 15. I wasn't exactly a kid anymore, so it's not like, hey, son, what are you doing there?
I mean, 15 still... it's still considered a kid.
Yeah, but it's not like I got it for Christmas and he's like, oh, well, buddy, you're probably going to need help building this one. You know, and
yeah, it's not like me working with my six-year-old on the Batman thing.
Yeah.
No, but still, I mean, a 15-year-old kid in my eyes is still... I mean, Casey, you're not even 30 yet, so yeah. 15 years ago wasn't even half your life.
No, you're right.
So...
thanks for poo-pooing on Casey and making him
over. No, man. Like, listen.
No, I'm just saying, like, yeah, that's part of your childhood.
Yeah, once
man.
You hit 30, you really just start looking forward to dying unless you're a Highlander.
Yeah. It's so true.
If my stint on breaking the panel has proven anything, is your future is bleak and grim, and you just have to find every opportunity to ruin everything that everyone else enjoys.
I
like
hate all of
how water kills aliens on signs and all this other shit.
Man, so, Bill, I'm just collecting board games and toys until you can burn me on a Viking pyre of it all when I go.
We could have done that 3 years ago, Paul.
Well, every year it gets bigger, okay?
Yeah. What's your favorite, Phil?
It's hard to say, to be honest with you, because all the stuff I have behind me really doesn't hold much value.
No, it's not your most valuable. It's your favorite.
No, I know. But my wife got me a Waluigi board
for
Christmas, which is pretty funny. I have my my Futurama comic number one up there, but
that bongo swag.
Yeah, I got a bunch of them, but number one's I haven't opened it. Like most things in my life, I haven't opened it or read it.
I completely understand buying a comic book and never opening it.
But he's exposing it to light, so it's not a collectible.
Yeah,
he can't read.
But it's got pictures. It's got pictures.
And he won't even open a movie picture, let alone.
I mean, I would have to be able to read the menus to start the movie. Yeah. I can't.
I don't know. 2-year-olds all around the world have somehow figured that out. I think you could too.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny that that's not something.
Yeah, I bet you
never mind. But my favorite thing in this room probably is my original NES. It actually started out to be my father's, and he bought it before I was even born, and it was transferred onto me as soon as I could pick up the controller and play it, and it's absorbed my life completely. And now the great thing is that he and I used to play Tetris or Dr. Mario or even a little bit of Bubble Bobble together.
Oh, yeah, Bubble Bobble.
And so... now I get to actually continue the tradition and play with my own son, and when he gets old enough, introduce him to all these great retro video games.
You're making me cry, man.
So awesome. it's pretty cool. It's because, like, great. You know, I've been keeping every game I've ever had on the NES to my left, which you can't see.
Sure.
But it's been growing since my retro collecting has just taken most of his college fund, but at least he'll have these memories of us beating Castlevania or Mega Man 1 through 6 together. So I'm excited for him to grow old and be able to appreciate, you know, where video game came from to where it is now, where we have cardboard cutouts. I know, crazy, but
we'll look at Daniel in 30 years and he'll be like, son, well, it's been passed down to the firstborn in the Keating line, from generation to generation.
From generation to generation.
By the time you have grandkids, they'll have a VR set where they can virtually sit with you and play it, you know, as you are now. It'll just
they'll be, playing NES games in the Oasis.
Yes. They'll be able to download my Ghost, and yes, I'll be able to play with my great-great-grandchildren.
Dude, that reminds me a story that came out a couple years ago. You know, ghosting being like a Mario where you can race online, you race ghosts, whatever.
Sure,
was a story about a daughter like yourself, or no, you're not a daughter, but like you'd play with
like me, yes.
She'd play with her dad. Her dad passed away with cancer, and then she realized at some point after the grief period that his ghost was still in the game, and she would race his ghost on his birthday as a happy memory. And it, yeah, I know that's not what you meant, but it was very
No. But yeah, I remember hearing about that.
That's how Phil's memory will live on: time trial ghosts and Mario Kart.
He'll just be smashing my double dash scores and be like, "God, my father was such a fucking awful at this game."
And then he'll drink bad wine and cry.
Yes, just like his old man.
Scott, what's your favorite, man? What you got?
Oh man. It's tough. One of my most absurd is out of HeroClix. I simultaneously have a Shuma-Gorath figure that has a little eyeball that moves around, and it's amazing.
Nice.
And I also have the Kree Supreme Intelligence, which is a giant head in a jar. Those are pretty cool. From X-Wing Miniatures, you know, I've got a Tantive, Krillian Corvette Blockade Runner, which is sweet because, like, it's like a $90 model, but the level of detail and the authenticity to the original model that they used in the film is pretty, it's pretty up there. Like, people who are really into high quality models have looked at it and praised it for being pretty close. Pretty damn close. So that's a prized possession. I don't know. I have a lot of stuff, man, but at the same time, like, a lot of it just, you know, gives me joy.
Are we talking just collectibles or straight up toys? Because my favorite collectible isn't really a toy.
What's your favorite collectible?
It's the No Prize I got signed by Stan Lee last year. Yeah. Basically, it's an empty envelope that I paid $120 to get signed by a 94-year-old man. It's probably completely worthless to anybody else who doesn't know what it is.
Yeah. No, that's fair. I've actually got to, I'll wrap up with one as a fairly long story. I'll do the short one. I love odd, weird things. And I've always hated collecting because...
Charles has a monkey's paw.
No, I don't have a monkey's paw.
He's got a real, it's a hand of glory, a candle that's made out of a seven human hand. He's got some Hellboy mystical shit in his basement.
Oh, no, that'd be too awesome. But I hate collecting because there's no end to it, right? There's always something else to get out there if you're getting this collection. So when I see weird stuff, it just speaks to me. I get it. I've got this vinyl Kiss Hello Kitty doll that I had to have as soon as I saw it. I mean, you know, you see that on the shelf, you're like, I'm taking that home. I'm taking that home right now. One year I bought, and it's not mine, so I wouldn't tell the story, but you can kind
of
see.
Is Kiss's blood in the ink of that pop doll? No,
it is not. But there, those brown boxes, you can't really see. That's the band Korn. That's the Korn dolls. All five members of the band. My wife loves the band, and that was her Christmas one year, and she really dug it. Now, this is the one that has a little bit of a long story. So when my wife and I were dating, I was a drummer in a few bands and just loved doing that stuff. And a huge fan of the Muppets. So I was a big fan of Animal, of course. And I still am. I mean, Animal's got it down. He knows what he wants. He goes after it and he thinks it's fun. And we had an agreement to do $50 cap for Christmas. And this is when we're dating. And we'd only been dating for a few months at that point. And I stuck to it. I mean, I got her like some bumper stickers and a cow calendar for Chick-fil-A. They'd first year they started doing them, blah, blah, blah. And all this stuff. Well, she went looking for authentic. And she didn't know what authentic meant. She went knowing what she wanted, high quality animal doll. She ended up spending like $110 on this thing.
Woo!
Because it's not just the animal doll, because all the animals, stuffed animals that she found of the animal from Muppets had a cheesy plastic chain. So she went to Hot Topic and at the time paid like $30 for this collar chain to put on Animal so that he'd be, for her, in her mind, authentic. And I love this thing. It's been every studio I've ever had since I started having studio, including, you know, when I did a band. It's been with me. Every time when I had a drum kit, he was chained to the drum kit. I love that thing. It's amazing.
What kind of drum kit did you have?
I had a Pearl at one point. Oh, nice. And I can't remember the other set. I had a cheapo set to start with, and
sure, everybody does, but
But nobody cares about music. No, I'm kidding.
But yeah, that's
good. That's awesome. That's good. I love that whole animal story.
Yeah.
I also love that his Hello Kitty doll is like, it's got the Peter Chris face.
Yes, it totally does.
Which is super appropriate. He's the cat man.
The only thing I do collect kind of is Cookie Monsters. And I collected them when they weren't around. And now you can fucking get Cookie Monsters and everything everywhere. And that's why I stopped collecting. So I don't collect Funko Pops because there's only fucking bajillion of them. When you go to Target and get them on clearance, it's not really a collector's item anymore.
No. Just saying. So I'm mostly like my collecting is vinyls, and I have picked up my mother's and also my uncle's vinyl collections, but that's where my, you know, this Nintendo shit doesn't have anything on my record collection. So that's where my real set, you know, heart pieces come from, because each record that I have, I can either trace back to the point where I picked it up, or I can trace it back to a memory that I have with you know, my mother or, you know, my uncle or my other uncle. You know, people realize that I collect these and have been bringing me their record collections throughout the last couple of years. So, that's cool. But that's all. Yeah. I really dig that animal story.
That's the short version.
What's the most prized record in your possession?
It's hard to say with really right off the bat.
Original White Album.
I don't have an original White Album with the lettering on the front. I do have a second pressing of the White Album with all the original posters still intact inside.
Nice.
But the original White Album came with like a serial number on the front, and that was just a press junket, you know, 1,000 copies. I don't have that, but
I've got I've got an original Saturday Night Fever vinyl, the BG
nice
soundtrack to the movie.
I bought my dad the Guardians of the Galaxy deluxe album a couple of years ago.
Nice.
I have a Sgt. Pepper's and a Abbey Road unopened, and that will probably be the most expensive ones I have, but there's other records that mean more to me than two original pressing Beatle records that aren't open.
Oh. All right, so we're going to wrap this out. Of course, as I said earlier, you can hit us up on patreon.com/breakingthepanel. Facebook is facebook.com/breakingthepanel. Twitter's @panelbreakers. And let's see, you can email us btp@giantsizeteamup.com. B is in breaking, T is in D. P is in panel @giantsizeteamup.com. So, yeah, you know what? I'm going to throw it to Phil. Tune in. If Chris Wisdom were here, tune in to hear him say next week.
Previously on Botched. Dashiell Valentine is actually a...
Breaking the Panel is the flagship podcast on the Giant Size Team Up Network. You can support the show at patreon.com/breakingthepanel, and you'll find more of our amazing podcasts at giantsizeteamup.com.